Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the 31st episode of the Pirate Rugby Pod.
We are very close to hitting 900 YouTube subscribers, so a huge thank you to everyone for tuning in and following us so far. You know the drill, but if you like what we do, please like, share, and subscribe.
Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to the Substack as well. We've just done an article looking at what our Six Nations team of the tournament would have been if you weren't allowed to pick any Irish players, because obviously they were the best, so it was boring to include them. Links are all in the link tree link in the description box down below. If you subscribe to the Substack, you'll get every single piece of content that we ever make emailed direct to your email inbox. Anyway, enough of the plugging. It's time to introduce our esteemed guest of the week. We're very excited for this one. It's the best known South African in Texas, or is he the best known Texan in South Africa? We'll find out during the course of this. It is the host of the 8-9 Combo podcast, Harry Jones. Harry, how are you, sir?
How's it, Hugh? How's it, Ender? Very happy to be here. Yes, I am, in fact, the Charlize Theron of South African expat rugby. I am forever traveling the world, but my roots are deeply in the beautiful, deciduous waters of the Western Cape, the fairest cape in all the world, the Cape of Good Hope, and I'm happy to be here with you chatting rugby.
Fantastic. So we do our international weather check right now. So it in Leamington at the moment is actually it's all right weather. It's dark now because we're recording at night here at the moment, but the weather has been fierce mild, I think we would call it. How about you, Ender, over in Dublin?
Fierce mild, I like that. Same over here in Dublin, looking at about 10 degrees. It was nice and bright this morning for the first time. And I've noticed and sunny. Anyway, so all good. Yeah. What's it like in Texas, though?
Crisp, cold, sunny. It is.
When you say cold, brilliant. What's cold in degrees?
Between 5 and 10.
Okay, fair enough. That's actually cold. Sometimes, like, we get, like, South Africans come on and they're like, yeah, it's cold. It's only, like, 20 degrees. We're like...
It's still shorts weather, but, yeah, it's a crisp.
Awesome. Right, let's crack on straight with the show and do our rugby moment of the weekend to start us off.
Yeah, it's an easy one for me, and it's one that we had from one of our listeners, Maz, also a previous guest on the show, and it was Peter O'Mahony. In tears during Ireland's call. Ireland's call is not the greatest anthem in the world. Aaron Navine is much better. But obviously, it probably just the whole emotion of the occasion got to him. He was, it's his first time captaining Ireland during the Six Nations. It's potentially his last Six Nations game, potentially his last international game for Ireland. He's been very, I think, coy since the game. He doesn't want to make the whole occasion about him. You know, maybe he's not retired from international rugby, but there are certainly signs that he might be. And yeah, it was just a lovely moment to see how much it meant to him. And again, it wasn't during one of Ireland's best anthems. But again, it was just one of those lovely moments. He's been a great servant to Irish rugby. And he's hopefully got plenty more in the tank left him with Munster. But yeah, I thought that was a lovely moment. What about yourself, Hugh?
Yeah, mine's pretty much exactly the same thing, except for George North. We do have the best anthem. So he got suitably emotional during it. And what I love most about seeing players like that is it's the moments where you can most connect with them, because like, even though you're this incredible athlete and I'm just some guy sat at home, like we both would feel the same way in that scenario. And well, maybe like you've given a lot more to be there than I ever would, but that's how in my mind I would be in my last ever anthem, maybe even more so. And yeah, he went off injured, but someone, I think Jack Fogarty, pointed out to me on Kalen's show at the weekend that kind of being carried off the pitch in your last ever international is kind of a cool way to go out. It's kind of a, I had nothing more to give, they literally had to drag me off the pitch type thing. That I'm kind of okay with that. So that's how I would sell it to George if I was speaking to him. But yeah, legend of Welsh rugby, deserves every bit of acclaim that he ever gets, and good luck to him out in France. How about you, Harry? Do you have a moment from the weekend?
Yeah, George North was kind of like an ancient warrior being carried off on his shield. You're right. For me, it was Ben White doing his part for player welfare and making sure that his head didn't get a knock by playing the matador on Dan Sheehan's try. If you watch it very closely, and I posted on my socials, there's an amazing ushering on that try to overthrow. Dan Sheehan catches it in mid-flight. It was going to be an impact, a collision, but he had a forward helping him from the inside, did Ben. But there's just this marvelous, like, no, please come through moments. And so I think that's good. I think that's great to, you know, to fight, to preserve himself for the later battles.
Yeah, definitely a wise life choice, I think. Speaking about some listeners' moments, so we love when our listeners tell us their moments of the week. If anybody has any that they want to share with us on listening to this, hit them either in the reviews on Spotify or drop them in the comments down below on YouTube. The ones that we've had on Twitter when we asked for them before the show. Kalen says Ireland winning the Six Nations is his moment of the week. That's boring, Kalen. You know, who does that? Maz, as Ender said, was Peter Marnie's tears. From the Mark Rugby says Ross Vincent's covering tackle against Wales to prevent a try was his moment of the week. It reminded him of Peter Omani's moment against the All Blacks a few years ago, where he plucked the ball out of thin air and prevented a certain try. He loved that. And then Scrummaging Fly Half said the Sharks not losing this week was his moment of the week. I think there might be a reason they didn't lose this week, but we'll just take the wins while
we're
at it.
We'll get into the detail.
Right, so sticking with a bit of chat of what's been going on before we actually dive into the rugby itself. So, Harry, we're discussing the laws of the game again. World Rugby are discussing the laws of the game again. They're proposing to make some changes. Now, the 20-minute red card is something that's been long debated, so I don't think we'll touch too much of it on this show. I think everyone's views are pretty clear on that. They're looking to outlaw the croc roll, which I thought they had already done. I'm going to be honest, I didn't realize they hadn't done that yet. The DuPont law is looking to be gone. I think everyone's pretty okay with all those, but the controversial ones are as follows. So they're looking to remove the scrum option from a free kick. They're looking to make it playable from a maul after one stop. They're looking to allow not straight lineouts if they're not contested. And they are looking to allow calling for a mark from a restart. So let's take those in order. Harry, scrum option removed from the free kick. Why do you think they want to make that law change?
Well, I think we know why the reason is, but it's a very bad idea because I think they crowded too many people into this big summit that Sir Bill Beaumont did tell us about on our podcast. And he said they're going to get everyone, every single person. I think that's what happens. You have every single person, there's compromises made. That might have been like near the end of the two-day meeting and someone just got tired and said, okay, I think there's tilting at windmills when you try to remove scrum as an option for a free kick. I mean, one of the most iconic moments of the 21st century of rugby was Willems's flex. It was a dramatic moment. It showed an acumen of the law. And then right when we realized you couldn't even do it, I mean, everyone around me, the French guys around me in the stadium were saying, can you even do that? And I was like, of course. I had no idea. But I said, yes, you must. It cuts down on the fight of possession. So here's what I'm going to say. Whatever we do, whatever we ever do on any kind of law, a tweak, we should always continue the continuous, continual, forever, never-ending fight for possession. That is the real mark. If you're watching rugby with someone who hasn't watched and they're into other collision sports, you go, look, it just keeps recycling in different ways. It's not always phases. Sometimes it's kicks. But it's the idea that you're always going to be fighting for possession. So when you keep letting things not be a fight for possession, whether it's by scrum or by tackle or by collision, you're getting away from a game for all shapes and sizes. You're getting away from sort of a seminal thing that makes rugby different. I do think that it also, you're just cutting down on the contest level in the name of having continual movement or movement instead of action. So I do think, you know, anyone who really wants to get into rugby is going to enjoy these contests. I don't think the scrum is abdicating action. I don't think it's a cessation of action. I think we need to embrace it more and explain it more. And I think that having breaks in action sometimes allows us to do that. But instead, I think people are just saying, I don't want to do the work to become a good scrum. So that's what I think. But maybe I'm wrong.
Ender, you've always had a couple of views on scrums. What do you reckon?
No, I think you're dead right, Harry. One thing that definitely gets, one thing that really frustrates me is that we seem to want to get closer and closer to rugby league. And what we really need to do is just embrace what rugby union is. And what rugby union is, to me, certainly is the scrum. It should be celebrated. And as you said, it should just be explained. And I think commentators and a lot of people think it's almost fashionable now at the moment to criticize scrums and how long they take and all the resets and how the ref doesn't know what he's doing. Should the linesman be involved more? And the pundits don't know. You'll often hear pundits say, I don't even know why that penalty was given. I don't even know. They don't even make that effort maybe sometimes to learn. And I think that that's an opportunity for rugby. Let's embrace the scrum. Let's explain it better. Let's use all these stoppages that we have to do some analysis. Bring in somebody from the sideline, bring in somebody like Bernard Jackman, bring in these experts who know what's going on and actually just explain it to people, and then they won't just dislike it and just groan when there is a scrum. I think it's something we should look forward to. That moment you mentioned, the World Cup of Villains, that was so innovative, and that's something that should get us excited. Let's embrace rugby for what it is, and it's different, and stop trying to I know it's like you say, let's speed up the game, that's what it's all about. But as you said, that was fascinating about everything is contestable, and I think you're dead right, and that's possession does swing back and forth, and that's not a bad thing. Let's make it contestable. And again, let's make it a sport for, which it is, for all shapes and sizes. But if we get away from the scrum and that fundamental set piece, we're going to lose that to an extent. What about yourself, Hugh? What are your thoughts on all these changes in that one, maybe in particular?
No, I can agree with what you guys are saying. I can kind of see it as if a free kick is awarded from a scrum, because there's some kind of a problem at the scrum, to allow them to go for the scrum again. I can see, if you've already had 2 minutes of trying to make that scrum work and it hasn't worked and you want to take that away, I get it from that point of view. But like you said, I think we need to be working in rugby union to make the scrum more exciting and make it a bigger narrative of the game rather than try and cut down on it. And kind of on the kind of same sort of wavelength for the playing after once stopped at the mall. For me, the mall, a driving mall, is low-key one of the most exciting parts of a game of rugby, especially close to the try line. If a team's trying to push over the number of times where I've seen a maul going towards the line and then the referee calls once stopped, and then you've got that heightened jeopardy there, and then you've got that moment of they either need to get going or the defensive team is right on the edge of winning this turnover. For me, I don't really get what that one's about. Harry, why do you think they would want to play after once stopped at a mall?
There's a lot of mall mythology, right? So there's only between 6 and 14 meters a game progressed by mall. The mall is actually a floating platform. It allows you to win advantage sometimes, which is what people should want, because it leads to flowing moves. It is a base from which you can attack, where the defense has to keep marching backwards and you want them on the back foot. So it actually promotes the attacking rugby we say we want. It's difficult to form. It's not that easy to get the transfer right, to take the line out, to get it down, to get it to the back, and then don't infringe. Very few mauls roll for 20, 40 meters. It's not like it just rolls over. The rate, percentage of success from even 5 meters is not as high as people believe. There is jeopardy in a maul. Refs do call against the attacking team often. So I think it's an invented problem. Look, I mean, jeopardy is everything in this, what makes a sport really exciting. I think Sir Bill said it was to dial up the entertainment value. So you look at the fastest growing sports in the world. What are they? MMA, soccer or football continues to grow everywhere, basketball and esports. Now, these things are simple rule plays, sports. They do have contacts in many cases, or they have tremendous skills involved, but they're simply reffed. And they don't change the rules that much. You can watch a game from basketball, and the way people play basketball is different, but it's not different in the rule necessarily. Soccer, same thing. MMA just unites different, very rigidly traditional fighting arts, and they don't. The rivalries are vivid. They have big events, big calendars. They can all use social media. They don't care if they rip the images and spread them all over the place, unlike rugby. So I don't think that we're tweaking laws is going to make more people come to rugby. I think rugby is actually a fantastic sport and very exciting. But I think, you know, they're trying to get away from what people protest about. So emerging nations, people that are lost, the lost World Cup, they're saying this is not fair. But I don't think it really is the way to make it more exciting. I think clarity in how we make decisions, using the assistants properly, would go a longer way. There's no reason to pretend that precision on touch judgments, except on tries and 50-22s, is that important. Why do we have two assistant referees floating so far away when they could help us referee a mall to make sure that it's not obstructive or just, you know, wrong? I just think this thing has the feel of committees on steroids gone wrong, 2 days in the tank, everyone's grumpy, and it just gives someone something. So hopefully the trials reveal this to be a backfire. And we just had some of the best matches ever played in rugby. We just had extraordinary numbers. Women are joining rugby like no tomorrow. So apparently they're not deterred by whatever we're doing with contact and tackles and so forth. Why are we changing something that's on an upward trajectory so much? Why don't we just keep clarifying how we rule, you know, the ad hoc nature of TMO, deciding how we want this thing to flow, instead of keep tweaking things that look very much like, you know, the losers wanting something to go different in the game. I don't know. Again, I may be wrong, but it just has that kind of smell to it.
Yeah, I think the other two as well, like the one when I read the laws, the proposal for the laws, the one that made me go, what? No, was allowing not straight line outs if it's uncontested.
That's stupid. That's so funny. Like, so every single time you're going to do that, right? You're going to dare the other side to put a man in the air because that's what you want. Now I got you in the air, so now I'm going to roll you in a mall. If you don't contest it, I can literally throw it to the outside shoulder of the lock.
It would just become like not straight feeds at scrums. It would just be just.
So then I want more mauls. I would kick to the corner all the time because now I know I can do not straight. So I do think that there's they haven't looked at. Every time you make a rule, you're going to have a backlash.
Yeah. And I think it's like the if it's held up over the line, it's a goal line dropout. I think like that's one that they were trying to achieve something and see what they're trying to achieve. It hasn't worked. It hasn't done what they wanted it to do.
Fair.
So whether they're going to backtrack on that. And I think mark from a restart is an interesting one, but I think that could have unintended consequences. Like at the end of a game, if you've got a one score lead, and someone's just scored, just kick it long. And then it's either they've got to run it back, or if they call a mark, they're eating their own clock. So it just kind of takes that. It helps the team defending potentially in some circumstances, possibly. But anyway, it'd be cool if all of these were trialed and we could see them, preferably not in New Zealand, because once the New Zealanders trial something, they decide they love it and then they make us all do it. But anyway, let's move on then. So Ender, we've had the shortlist for the Six Nations announced. There's only four players on it. Now, I don't know when they moved to only doing four players. They used to do a good five or six. But the four players they've announced are Bundiaki, Duhan van der Merwe, Tommaso Menoncello, and Ben Earl. What's your reaction to that list?
It could be longer, certainly. Somebody like Bundiaki, there are no surprises that he's on there. You know, especially on the back of an absolutely phenomenal World Cup. It's great to see him. Like, as he ages, he's getting even better, which is just brilliant to see. I am a bit surprised, like, even from an Irish perspective, and it wouldn't be everybody's choice, but I thought Jack Rowley, just in the whole context of Sexton retiring and, for, like, talking about big boos to Phil. And he just, like, maybe he didn't have a standout Six Nations, but I just thought, like, in the context of Irish rugby and Johnny Sexton retiring, I thought he did phenomenally well. And whether or not he should have been, you know, nominated, I'm not too sure. But just from an Irish perspective, he is the one who jumps out to me. Like, when you look at the entire Irish squad from Six Nations, I think so many players just did consistently well. And they had to pick someone, and they picked Aki. But you could have easily picked Caelan Darris. You could have picked half the bloody team, I think, to be honest. Tyburn. But yeah, I'm not too disappointed. Like I don't get hung up on these things about players of the tournament. I like the idea of a player of the game. I don't know. What's your take on this? Like, are you disappointed in that list? Think it should be longer, or like somebody like Duhan van der Merwe? Surprised he's on there?
I'm surprised Duhan's on there. Obviously he had kind of the biggest impact on a single game of maybe one player with his hat trick against England. Out of that list, I hope Menoncello wins. I voted for Menoncello just because I think having an Italian player win it is the most exciting thing. For me, James Lowe would have been the winner because I look at all the stats, and his stats for every game are just like, short of jumping in the line out and pushing in the scrum, he couldn't have done any more in any single game that he played in. It was ridiculous. Harry, what do you think of awards like this? What, with it being a fan vote rather than like a panel of experts awarding it? Is it just a kind of a bit of a throwaway, or do you think it's cool?
Yeah, I don't take it that seriously. I think sometimes there's a year lag and it seems like they're rewarded for something they did 12 months ago sometimes. Certainly with DuPont, that happened to him. It's happened to Etzebeth a couple times too. I would say it was between James Lowe and Jameson Gibson-Park for the best back in the Irish team. And I would always give it to the best team if the best team is that much better than everyone else. I mean, and then in the forwards will be Doris or Byrne. And I kind of think it's Jameson Gibson-Park because he had to carry a young 10. He had to do a lot more. And I think he made everyone look better around him, which is amazing in the good team. That's probably where I would go. I think Duhan was more of a one-hit wonder. And then I think the sentimentality when you get these rewards, that's why you're always looking for an Italian in this situation. But I just think Ireland, you know, was so far above everyone on points differential. I'd look for their... Benrel was definitely off the charts, so I can see why he gets on the list.
Cool. Okay, so that's the chat about the stuff off the pitch. And we've gotten to that bit of the show where we actually talk about some actual rugby. So Six Nations is drawn to a close. Ireland are champions. France are second. And there were some others. And Wales didn't attend this year. Can't talk about them. So what we did a couple of weeks ago when we got to the halfway point of the URC, is we handed out the school grades for every URC team for the season so far. And that was really popular, went down really well. So we thought we'd do the same again for the Six Nations. So we put it to the popular vote. But who cares what the popular vote said when you've got such incredible experts as we have on this podcast? So we're going to get their takes as well. So we're going to start from the top and work our way down. Ender, it's your team. If you were giving a school grade to Ireland for their Six Nations campaign, what would you give them?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
After the last two games, it's kind of thrown me a little bit. But overall, and I think this is something we discussed after World Cup and the beginning of Six Nations, was how would Ireland react to the massive World Cup disappointment, and they've reacted pretty goddamn well, if you ask me. So it would probably be an A, not quite the A plus, but I think A overall, just to how they reacted, how Jack Rowley seamlessly stepped in, how they've stuck to their game plan, and everything that every single interview you listen to of an Irish player, they just talk about how happy they are as a group, how they're all the best mates, how they all get on well, and they all just seem like they want to be in that group. They want to be playing for each other. They love playing for the country. And yeah, so for me, yeah, Ireland, I think I would go with an A.
Yeah, I think with them winning that game in France so emphatically, and the door seemed open for a second consecutive Grand Slam that had never been done before. And then they kind of lost that shine against England. And I think it in the minds of a lot of Ireland fans who were hoping for something here, and they only got something here. For audio listeners, I'm indicating height with my hand. I think I can see why it feels like a bit of a come down, but my advice to Ireland fans would be enjoy it while it lasts, because take it from a Wales fan, doesn't last. So just sing when you're winning is what I would say. Harry, the Springboks have got some big tests against Ireland coming up in the summer. Are you scared?
I am not scared. I'm really excited about it. I'll be in both tests. I'll be in Loftus and I'll be in Durban. And it was interesting that so many people anointed them the champions of the world. So with Pretoria in view having been talked up, it was interesting that Andy Farrell went straight out and said, let's quash all that. We're going to play the best in the world. I think Ireland has a very good mental state to repeat, to come back from that quarterfinal loss. They seemed unaffected in the Six Nations. I thought that was the most remarkable thing, to have no hangover. I'm going to give Ireland an A-. You have to give it A- because you lost to England. Ireland is a unicorn. James Lowe learned how to play defense. This is amazing. They are Ireland, the incrementalists. They are Ireland, the unaffected. I'm reminded of a little line from Longfellow. We have not wings, we cannot soar, but we have feet to scale and climb by slow degrees, by more and more the cloudy summits of our time. Ireland is just strange. You have a happy-eyed Hugo Keenan and Dan Sheehan and Gary Ringrose. They're like children running around just happy. And then you have that weed-pulling bastard with the sad eyes. So I don't know how to reckon. They've just got the perfect team of captains. They got cleaning crews. They're crime scene fixers. I mean, any rock that gets out there, they just wipe it like the wolf. There's nothing left, no fingerprints. They rock way beyond. So that'll be reffed in the Pretoria. But they fixed the line out. I'm going to say A- with some room to grow. And I think Farrell and O'Connell and those guys would like that, because I think they like to work on shit all the time. Until the last match, they had too many penalties. I'll say that. That's a problem for them that they got to fix. And suddenly
they give the penalties away in good areas, though.
Yeah, but suddenly in the final match, they just didn't give any penalties away. So they have the ability to tighten.
Yeah, cool. I can tell you that the people gave Ireland a very nice 69% voted for A. So they agree with the people on the pod. Next is France. So I'll come to you, Harry. A lot of people, including myself, were picking France for a Grand Slam before the tournament, and that hasn't happened. Now, they ended up second on the log with two defeats. No, one defeat and a draw, I think. I think they won all the rest of the games, so it can't have been that bad. But there's talks of Sean Edwards being out. He's lost his touch. The whole backline cohesion went to absolute pot. There's players out. Do they miss DuPont? What grade would you give them? Was this a bump in the road for France and they'll be back? Or is this the beginning of the end?
France is a C for me. They are the wild boar. They have some little cute boars and big snorting boars. They're just running around like crazy. They allowed 14 tries. That's way too many. I think they have too many behemoths in their team. They cannot move left or right or backwards. It's just forward. For me, when I think of France, I always think of Johnny Hallyday, the late singer. And he sang a song called Song pour Song, which is all about being caught between fire and ice, you know, prise entre le feu de la glace. And so I look at Galtier and I look at Edwards and I just think it's like a Johnny Hallyday marriage. He was married five times, twice to the same person. I just think they're going to have some kind of split. It looks an unhappy camp. It's covered over by weird flying hack kicks by Ramos in the middle of nowhere. And Penaud, who just looks like the most annoying fella in the world, he just runs from nowhere and scores. They caught between boredom and rage. I think France just joined Scotland as defining a good season by beating England again and again and again. Sure. But the only good home match in the Six Nations is the final one. That doesn't make sense. They were really terrible in Lille and Marseille. So C for me.
They did have some really poor performances. I think against Italy, they deserved to lose that game. I think they were particularly poor. And the opener against Ireland was such a shock, especially considering how Toulouse and UBB and stuff have been going in Europe. It was no one saw that coming. Ender, is this what's the missing ingredient for France? Is it just DuPont?
That'd be the easy answer, wouldn't it? No, obviously he was missed. Like, we can't forget how good he is. But obviously it just seems like there's something rotten there. There's something going wrong. It just doesn't seem like a happy camp from what you read into these things. It just doesn't seem like it is. And yeah, some of the performances were just so disjointed, just so frustrating to watch, especially because we know how good they can be. We questioned how they would react to the World Cup disappointment. They've obviously reacted really poorly. So it's you know, maybe that's all it is. Maybe it's just a mental thing on the players. Maybe there's no rift between players and management and between the management themselves. I don't know, but I think this is a classic World Cup hangover, and they've just reacted really poorly to it. But I don't think they've become bad players overnight. Gaffney's done really good things with France up until the Six Nations. So I'd say it is salvageable, but in typical French fashion, maybe it's all just like, maybe it's all going to go belly up. I don't know. I hope not. Because we all love watching France play, and they were pretty exciting to watch before the Six Nations. But who knows? Like the Sean Edwards rumors are fascinating, I think. But then you hear that he's just a bit of an oddball. He likes to do just his own thing. So maybe people are just really into that situation a bit too much. But there's something gone wrong, isn't there? Like, but yeah, hopefully it'll all be revealed. But I'd say it's salvageable, absolutely.
Yeah, I think if they did let Edwards go, he'd get another job like that. The people gave France a C. 65% gave them a C. So I think that's another one correct for Harry. I think whatever happens to France, whichever way it goes next, we'll be telling the stories for decades. Number three was England. Kings of consistency, third at the World Cup, third in the Six Nations. You can't knock it. So I'll tell you what why I get so angry about England. One of the reasons I get so angry about England is the lies. It's the lies. It's the "this is a young team" lie. Yeah, the incredibly young Dan Cole, Danny Kerr, George Ford, Elliot Daly, all these incredibly young players. It's the they're an attacking team. They can now evolve how to attack. They carried the ball 65 times in France. They made 6 22 visits. They have the lowest points per 22 visit ratio of any team in the Six Nations. That's my piece. I'm the eternal admitter of my own bias. I don't like England. Could somebody on this podcast who does like England please stand up? For the viewers at home, nobody has stood up. So, Harry, what grade would you give England? Am I just a miserable bastard who's been mean to them?
England gets a B from me. They're the Borthwick believers. They are now following their disciples of Steve Borthwick. They truly do believe in their goodness. The problem for them, I said the good, I would say the Ollies, Freeman, IFW, George Martin lets Otoji be Otoji. The bad is they're trying to make guys swivel that don't know how to, they just cannot swivel. Elliot Daly does not look like a hip hop guy. I don't think that you can teach these wings to be the NFL cornerbacks that you need to be with your back to the play, 360 kind of Arendse, Colby, you know, you can list a bunch of South Africans. And also the number 13, whether it's Am or Creel, I don't really think Slade does it either. So I don't think that that's going to work. 13 tries for, 13 tries against, the Gamble Blitz, the Felix Flex. Look, for me, it's still good, though, because I think England showed a shape that looks good. Marcus Smith went from being deceptively slow to deceptively quick. I just think they look like they have a bounce about them. And I'm reminded of the poem by George Gordon, who we know as Lord Byron. "Dear doctor, I have read your play," which is a good one in its way, "purges the eyes and moves the bowels and drenches handkerchiefs like towels." There's just something about England that they can be the most confident third place team in the world. And I love that about them. I love to hate them, but I love that when they're on the little bit up, they're all the way up.
Well, I can tell you that English broadcaster journalist, friend of the show, Ben Nurse, responded to our poll saying, "It's 100% an A from me. Couldn't ask for anything more." I'm reading verbatim. "Of course, disappointing to be edged by Scotland and France, but competitive performance was enough and playing attractive rugby, more importantly, very, very exciting." That's what Ben said. He awarded them an A. Would you go along with that, Ender? Are you convinced by our friend Ben?
Not quite an A, probably on... be more inclined to go with Harry's B. Like, it's like seeing them beat Ireland was one of the most frustrating things I had to witness on the TV screen in quite a while.
I said on a pod a few weeks ago, imagine you lose to England, and we all went, oh.
But I did say, to be fair, that like they even put it up to Ireland that they seem to be Ireland's Achilles heel the last couple of years. So I think for that performance alone, you have to give them credit. And yes, they are playing slightly more expansive now, which is good. He does, as Harry said, the players have bought into the system, they bought into Borthwick. He does seem like the type of coach you would want to play for. I think that they're all good things. I think Marcus Smith is the perfect impact substitution that they need. Do I see them like winning the Six Nations next year? No. Do I see them win the World Cup in 4 years? I don't. Not if Borthwick's in charge. I don't think their particular game plan is capable of doing it, especially with the players that they have. But yeah, look, they've improved it as the tournament went on. We asked what they should do to improve. We said they should just hone in on what they're good at, which is pressure game, kick game. Like the amount of pressure they put Ireland under was incredible. They love their defense. Yeah, and they're just really good against their games, aren't they? And especially against Ireland. But yeah, I think they've improved. I still don't enjoy watching them. But yeah, look, credit where it's due. I think they're doing much better. We'll maybe leave it there. Because yeah, we'll see how their tour goes.
The word of caution that I would give England fans is: do not draw links between the Ireland performance and the France performance. They were not the same. So the stats I can give you is that against Ireland, the carry to kick ratio, it was 5 carries for every kick. Against France, it was 1.9 carries for every kick. Mm. They were not similar performances. I think they found an attacking identity, and it's a counter-attacking identity, which is okay. But we see in other sports, when a team picks up the identity of a counter-attacker, eventually people get bored of that and they want you to be on the front foot. So, but hey, I'm an England basher by name and by trade, so I'm always going to be on that page. Let's move to Scotland now. So I'm going to tee this conversation about Scotland up with a controversial statement. Scotland were mostly good for most of their games.
That's fair.
Do you agree, Harry?
Yeah, I think so. They're the one team you can look at and have maybe 3 discrete moments. You go, the whole thing looks different. I mean, there is the points differential, which is exactly 0. But still, if you change those 3 moments, it's, you know, plus 21. So they were grounded. They were almost too grounded. I think of Scotland as bears, like fun bears, like cute bears. And I don't like to say anything bad about Scotland. I actually feel bad the minute I say anything bad about Scotland because they're nice guys. But there's no scary players. The scariest player is Jamie Ritchie. He looks like Tigger in Winnie the Pooh. So, you know, there's like Grant Gilchrist. He's like a grizzly bear, but he's a nice grizzly. Duhan's like a skinny polar bear. Skuman's a panda. Hugh Jones is a teddy bear. So I just don't know if they're scary enough. I don't think they make the ref scared. I don't think they make the fans scared. I don't think they make anyone else scared. And so, you know, they kick the most. They kick 34 times a game. They're seeking some quick ball from spills and such. But they just look too docile. So I don't like to give them a grade because I just like them too much. But I'll give them a D because this is the greatest generation and such. A 7-year coach in place, and he doesn't seem to be able to make anyone scared. I mean, why does Gregor not kick a chair? You always see the oranges now and live, and he looks like he's like, hello, everyone. It's good to see you again, you know, first of all. And I just don't see him doing anything like...
Okay. So
yeah,
this is Scotland's golden generation, so we are told. So let me phrase the question in a different way. Are there other coaches out there that would have won the Six Nations with Scotland?
No, but there are other nations that would have put Scotland in for the title against Ireland in Dublin in the final minute.
Ender, would you go with that?
Yeah, I think so. If they had somebody like Joe Schmidt as well, I think they could be dangerous. In terms of a grade, though, for Scotland, I'd probably go with the C. I've said it so many times, I think they can genuinely beat anybody on their day, and then they can, you know, turn up the next week and lose to Italy. No disrespect to Italy, they deserve that. They did a fantastic Six Nations, but to me that typifies Scotland. They're capable of beating anybody in the day, and then they just switch off next game. And it's a great point that Harry made. Like, they don't have that grunt of force like up front, do they? They don't have those. Yeah, there's those monsters or players that wouldn't. They don't have your even estimates and such. So yeah, I think overall a C. And unfortunately, their under 20s aren't, like, I hope there's talent coming through. Like, if this is a golden generation, it doesn't seem like the younger pairs, they've only got two clubs, etc., or two professional clubs, I should say.
Yeah. South African mother that's like threw them indoors. The Scottish are coming. So I can tell you that Harry is 4 from 4 because the people gave England a B and gave Scotland, well, actually, Harry, you didn't give Scotland a grade, did you? So give them one now and see where you go.
D.
Oh, you can't, have you got the poll in front of you? Are you on our Twitter? Is this what's happening?
I have my finger on the pulse of the people.
Okay, so I think 2 wins from 5 is massively belying of Scotland in the Six Nations. I'm normally the Scotland basher, but when they're bashing themselves, I've nothing to do. So I would say that Scotland were probably, on performances at times, the second best team in the Six Nations. They just managed to find out how to screw it up. Their performance against Italy, they completely shot themselves in the foot. It was almost like match fixing. It was like, what are you doing? It was so unlike them compared to the rest of the tournament. I'm not alleging Max fixing.
Thank you. Clear. I disavow myself from that.
Right. Now, we're on the fifth team here, but we haven't spoken about Wales. There must be some mistake. But anyway, Italy apparently finished 5th. And Harry, is this the best Italian side you've ever seen?
Yeah, I think so. And without bonus points, they would have finished 4th, by the way. With Italy right now, I think of them as students still, but they're really prodigies, because you look 6 months ago, they were losing by 90 and 60 points. So these are really progressing students. Reminder of the Latin phrase, vincit qui sa vincit, he conquers who conquers himself. These are the same players. They're just not running from nowhere, from everywhere. The odds do not favor it. Sure, like some of those Angie tries a year ago were highlight videos, but traps you in your own territory most of the time, and it's a bad way to win. So I think the balance, it's like a really well-made nacho. You know, the chip has just the right amount of gooey cheese and peppers on it, so nacho bricks, take a bow. They got proper heavy hitters at flank and midfield. They're scampering outside. I just think it looks like a team that knows itself. You know, the coach obviously has some kind of magic there, but definitely. I think it made the tournament. I think it was kind of an off year for the Six Nations, because it seemed like Ireland just had sparring partners, and then one, you know, the English sparring partner knocked them up by mistake. But it just seemed like Italy brought the whole standard up and said, there's no safe game.
Mm. I think I'd be interested to get Ben Darwin's thoughts on the cohesion for this Italy team. My guess would be that the cohesion for the starting team would be very, very high, but they would have no depth, is what I think they would be, because it's basically the Benetton team plus a couple of extras. But you have to say, it's worked for them. Ender, is this a one-off for Italy, or do you think this is the start of them ascending the table in the coming seasons?
I really hope it is. Based on their, you know, their club side's URC form, you know, Zebre is not great, but they're having their best campaign in quite some time. Benetton are doing really well. Their under 20s last couple of years have been really impressive. Obviously, talent coming through. You look at this side, they're a young side. So all the signs seem like they should be. But what we always have to not forget is that all the other teams are usually getting better too, with potentially Wales aside for the time being, but for all really good reasons that we know well. But I really hope so. And for me, there's just kind of their result this year just highlights the absolute bullshit that a lot of people calling for them to be kicked out of the Six Nations. I'm just so happy that because of where they finished, because that whole debate for me is just such a waste of breath, it's such a waste of energy. And also, none of these unions are ever going to vote for promotion relegation. So can we just stop talking about it? Imagine if Ireland had been in Wales situation now, finished last, there would be 84% of the, like, it would just be catastrophic for Irish rugby. Like, there'd be so much lost revenue there. We'd be out of Six Nations. They wouldn't be fitting on stages, wouldn't have the same TV deals, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I'm just so delighted for Italian rugby. And for people who kind of stood up for them and wanted to stay in this tournament. Because for me, you know, look, it's taken time. Maybe this is one top. Hopefully it's not. Hopefully this is a sign of things to come. But if you look at the evidence, they should continue in this trajectory. Again, a coach, like his first campaign as well, like you have to, like, that's just so incredible. And as Harry said, like coming from on the back of their absolutely horrific World Cup, no other way to put it. It's just, this is like, what a reaction. And I think everybody was delighted for them. But yeah, I'm just, can be, this hopefully puts to bed that nonsense idea of kicking Italy out. And I hope it does.
Well, I can tell you that our good friends Spritz and Scrum podcast replied to us saying that they would award them an A star. Yes, they let Wales score twice at the end to look like they were in it when they, in fact, they weren't. But it was mission accomplished. And by then they knew that. Room for improvement, but three games undefeated, which is, of course, their best ever campaign. The width of a post from winning three games in the Six Nations up to eighth in the world rankings, A star. What would you two give them as a grade?
No, it has to be an A when it's the best ever.
And
yeah, same, 100%.
I can tell you 55% of the people went with an A. Right. It's on to the Wooden Spoon winners, Wales. Obviously my team, so I'll do the talking. Yeah, not good. Disappointing thing being that we got worse as the tournament went on, when normally under Gatland, we improve as we go on. So this was very unusual. And I think that Warren is still trying to play Warren ball, the high possession, high carrying. So we were the second of the home nations. We were the second highest carriers behind Ireland. We were within, on average, 10 carries of Ireland per game. And yet Ireland's gain line success is 50% and ours is 40%. Gatland needs to admit that he needs to change and he needs to come up with new ways to break opposition down. Our defence wasn't a disaster, I wouldn't say. And I would say that there are players who have come into this team for the first time who have shown that they deserve to be in the jersey long term. But not a great look. And of course, the Welsh rugby Twitter meltdown has been real and it has been visceral. Harry, have you got any poetry on Wales you'd like to share? Maybe some Dylan Thomas, do not go quietly into that good night, rage, rage against the dying of the light.
No, today we'll go with the Wales. Wales are rams without horns. The disintegration is quiet. Their ligaments were unpicked by the slow rain. There's a sadness in me about Wales, and I think Wales has sadness in it inherently anyway, but I cannot seem to dispel the gloom around the story. The rehashed coach bringing Eddie Jones vibes with his pugnacity, his full youth team, letting in 30 points a match, playing cheeky boardroom games. You don't go out there and say that you submitted your resignation to the CEO before the CEO has talked about it, and then kind of buy yourself more time. I just think there's something wrong maybe about the rehashing of coaches. It probably was the right move for the World Cup, but I mean, if it's going to be a rebuild, then rebuild the coaching as well. Terrible, horrible, not good. I guess this is the failing grade.
Well, yeah. So, Ender, what grade did you give Wales?
Yeah, unfortunately, BNF, I don't like. Yeah, they were poor, but like, it's, yeah, it's tough. It's tough to see.
Well, the people, this was the most voted on poll that we had, and 63% of people gave Wales an F, which is tough to see. I think if this had been done after the Ireland game, people would be on a C. But the final two games were really tough. Anyway, that brings to a close our Six Nations review. But for two questions, I want you to each give me your surprise of the Six Nations. And I want you to each give me someone who was present at this Six Nations who you do not think will be present at the next Six Nations, which is a mean one, but we're mean sometimes. Harry, your surprise and your not long for the Six Nations World nominations.
Probably the good fellow Dan Cole. He always seems like a happy guy to me, unaffected as well by things. I just think that there were times when he was making tackles where it looked like he could not bend his body. And I think it'll be a race between him and Joe Marler, but I think Joe Marler will win because he seems like indestructible. Yeah, I think that's what it would be. What was that, a question? A surprise?
The surprise of the tournament.
I think probably the England win. I just think the way that it happened was a surprise. I actually think that they comprehensively beat Ireland. There was no trickery to it. They unrocked the ruck. they unrucked Ireland. And I think that is the only way to beat this current Ireland, is to take away their rucks. You know, I suppose that led to a subdued St. Patrick's Day. And I think it was also, if you actually go back and look what people read and wrote, it really was surprise. It was not seen as something that was told in the stars.
Enza?
I think for me, in terms of surprise, it would be Italy's performance and, yeah, finishing fifth place. I don't think many people would have seen that coming. I know a lot of people did tip them to beat Wales, but they still had to, you know, go to Cardiff and get that win. So I think that was huge. I don't think many people had them beating Scotland at home at a sold-out Saturday Field. So for me, that's a surprise. And then, unfortunately, the player, and I kind of mentioned him earlier, who we mightn't see next year, would be Peter O'Mahony. Unfortunately, hopefully the rumors are, could it all be nonsense. But those tears did look genuine. And yeah, hope it's not, but he's been an incredible servant.
For me, the surprise is France's lack of performance. I really thought that the Grand Slam was theirs to lose, having Ireland at home first up. So that was the shocker for me. And for me, a person that we won't see, not because they're going to retire, I think with George North leaving the Welsh Senators, I think Nick Tompkins is going to follow him. I think his the type of player that he is isn't what Wales need at the moment. And I think that his cohesion and his successful partnership with George North is a big reason why he was in the team. We know how important centre cohesion is. But with half of that act exiting stage left, I think the other half may well be doing the same. And I think the rebuild is now going to extend to the centres for Wales as well. But happy to be proved wrong. And if he comes back and is incredible for the rest of his Welsh career, none should be more happy than I. Okay, I'm going to quickly run through, well, myself and Ender, and with the help of Harry, are going to run through just how much flipping rugby there was this weekend, other than the Six Nations, not that you'd know about it. The first being Rugby Europe, so I'm just going to take this one. So we had four matches, all taking place at Stade Francais Stadium in Paris, because that's where it is. And the results with us. Belgium beat Poland again for the seventh place playoff. Belgium could well have finished higher in this tournament. They got some arguably unlucky against Germany, but hey, you make your own luck. Germany themselves were defeated by the Netherlands in the fifth place playoff. Some suggesting that if Netherlands were in the other pool, they may have gotten into the top four. So Netherlands, a big climber in the world of rugby. Excited to see how they go. It was an amazing game. So I actually watched this one. It was co-commentated by friend of the show, Francisco Isaac. Did a great show for us. Spain versus Romania, absolutely unbelievable match of rugby. It was five tries in the first half, including one where Spain were on Romania's line. All they had to do was go through the hands, score it, intercepted, ran the full length, Romania leading at halftime. But Spain fought back and in the end won it reasonably comfortably. The Romania coach at the end in his interview said that we won half the game. We won the first 20 minutes. We won the last 20 minutes. We did not win the minutes in between. And I think that's a fair reflection. But Squidge Rugby was going mad about the game on Twitter, saying everybody watch this now. And it's completely right too. It was fantastic. And then in the grand final, Georgia hammered Portugal. After the game, Francisco was interviewing the Georgian captain. And he asked the Georgian captain, I'm sorry, who it exactly was escapes me. Apologies for that. He asked him, when did you realize you were going to win this game? And the Georgian captain said, when we lost to Portugal in the World Cup, we knew we would win this one. So I that was a hell of a line. But again, Georgia looking very good. Tabit Sadze on the wing is now on 37 tries in 40 test matches. Incredible player. So that was fantastic. So, Ender, do you want to take us through some of the women's rugby that there was at the weekend?
Yeah, sure. So we had women's Super Rugby back. So the Waratahs are on top after beating the Brumbies 45 points to 10. The Force and Drua also picked up wins. Just a reminder to everybody as well that the women's Guinness Six Nations is back this coming weekend, with all games available in the UK and Ireland free to wear, which again is great to see. And then we also had the WXB 3 playoff, and the Netherlands beat Colombia 33-10. Want to move on to some Southern Hemisphere rugby, Hugh?
Yeah, so Harry, what have you been making of this crazy Super Rugby season that we've been having so far?
You know, speaking of Ben Darwin, you know, he was pinging me kind of a long time ago about the Crusaders' impending doom. The numbers just didn't add up. And they only have one player on the field that was in their title winning roster last year. So it's not that surprising, I suppose. And yet it is, because it's just one of those fixed things. You know, it's like the sun rising. They do start slow normally, but not like this. I do think, you know, the power shifted. The Hurricanes look very good. The Blues look a little bit muddled. And then on the Aussie side, you have the rise of the Reds, which is good for Australian rugby. Another one of those things, almost like in Italy, where you have a different coach, same set of players, different results. So you have to give a credit to Les Kiss.
Yeah, really, really surprising. The point about the players who are unavailable from the final last year is just incredible. But Crusaders, as we said, 0-4. The Chiefs are currently top. Reds in second, which, like I said, no one saw coming. And Moana are 2-4, which is fantastic to see. Their new coaches, Umaga and Stephen Jones, absolutely doing incredible things. You can tell when you watch them that they're a well-coached team. So enjoying that. What's been happening in Japan, Ender?
So the Wild Knights are 10-10, having just beaten Steer. And then Honda Heat won a game as they beat Quade Cooper's Kintetsu Liners 19-20, despite being down to 14 men at one stage.
Yeah, I'm a bit gutted because I was enjoying Honda Heat being a bit of a banter team, taking 50 every week, and now they've gone and bloody won a game. That completely ruins it. Anyway, Super Rugby Americas. Dogos are unbeaten at the top, having won the Argentinian derby against Pampas. Raptors beat Cobras in a fixture that proved that Super Rugby America has the best team names. Maybe only beaten by the second division of the Curry Cup, where you had the Elephants against the Eagles. But yeah, so Peñarol are weirdly not doing that great. Lost a couple of games. They lost at home to Yakari. They obviously got beat by Cobras first game, first up. So maybe they're just having an early season jitters and they'll come storming back, but who knows. In the under 26 nations, as we move into the Northern Hemisphere, England sealed the title in a thriller against France, came roaring back, end-to-end game, absolutely fantastic. Wales secured a shock comeback win over Italy. So Italy have been doing really well in the under 26 nations for the last few years, Wales not so much. So it was, and Italy were winning at halftime quite comfortably. But Wales came roaring back, so that was a real shock result there. Top 14 and Pro De Deux wasn't on this weekend, but there's a huge UBB versus Toulouse game on Sunday. What about what's been going on in England?
So there was one English championship game, and Nottingham beat London Scottish. There was, again, no AIL rugby, but there was Major League Rugby, Hugh. So do you want to take us through some of the
Harry, do you follow the MLR being stateside?
Yes, I actually work with one of the teams on some mall tactics, and I won't reveal which one it is, but we did very well this weekend.
Well, I can tell you that Sabercats was a team that went very well this weekend. As did the Free Jacks. Shout out to David, who got a big win over Nola Gold in what was a top clash in the Eastern Conference. Miami Sharks were the ones who were defeated by Sabre Cats. And in the Welsh Prem, Newport are now 5 points off Llandovery after they beat Neath, and Cardiff beat Carmarthen Quins. Carmarthen's still having a great season. Quins, I should say. There's two Carmarthen teams. I need to call them Quins. Right, let's wrap it up with the Rugby TV Guide, Ender, mate.
All right, folks, so the Six Nations might be over, but there's a hell of a lot of rugby coming up this weekend. The URC is back. The Top 14 is back. The Prem is back. As I mentioned earlier, we've got the first round of the Women's Six Nations. We've got Super Rugby Round 5. We've got Major League Rugby. And, of course, we've got Women's Super Rugby as well, which, yeah, is actually being televised by Sky in the UK and Ireland. So there are actually three games coming up this weekend. Sky, unfortunately, have been quite muted on their Super Rugby coverage this year for whatever reason.
Anyway, so I think we're very near the end of the show. Harry, do you want to quickly tell us a bit about the podcast that you've got going, the 8-9 combo?
Sure.
By the way, before you do, the strongest start to any podcast ever. Like the first few episodes with the guests that we've had, like talk about beginning with a bang.
Yeah, so Bill Beaumont meets Billy the Kid and Billie Eilish. That's our vibe, man. We're trying to do creative friction. We battle for time and space. That's why we picked 8 and 9. There's nothing on the rugby field quite like the 8 and 9 combo. It's like two foreign elements. There's something so different from a number 8 and number 9, but that's what we picked because Brett McKay and I kind of had that difference going. He's an Aussie based in Canberra, rarely leaves the ACT, and I am the global rugby fixer, just moving around the world. I love my time here on this part. I've always actually liked you guys. I think that you use your numbers fairly, honestly, and I think there's a kind of a cool, cheeky humility about it. I do want to say I'm actually working on quite a few projects, so I'll flog those. I'm working on a graphic novel that's been hopefully translated into 8 key rugby languages. It's where I take each position and kind of compare them to a master, a monk, a robber, a jockey, a rock star, an angel, a wolf, and a Baryshnikov doing ballet with a Kalashnikov. But, you know, the 8 languages, of course, are English, Afrikaans, Xhosa, French, Spanish, Kiwi, Portuguese, and whatever they speak in Scotland. And then I'm in the latter stages of a movie script about a scarred monk on a lonely island who plays rugby to fight demons. So hopefully you can join us on the 8-9 combo. We do bring great value. We have great guests. We have really had some of the best rugby personages in the world. But we believe in the pod world. We believe that cross-pod nation is super important. And we had Simon Rabalui on our pod, and he's all about this idea that the growth of rugby really is through this kind of thing. So it's been an honor to join you guys, and hopefully I brought some good value.
You absolutely did. It's been a fantastic show, and it was an honor to have you, sir. Anyway, we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you so much, guys, for tuning in, and we will speak to you next week. Cheers.
Sports Social Podcast Network.